And how could it happen that a person who seems to be doing good things could go to hell? Allah said, the son of Adam has insulted me, and he had no right to do so. From the perspective of the Muslim, the only one who has the right and the knowledge to decide what is truly good and what is truly evil, what is truly right and what is truly wrong, and what is the gradation or the grades of good and evil, is the creator of the heavens and the earth, Allah.
We're going to invite Abdul Rahim Green to give his lecture, you know, and hopefully that everybody will benefit from that. So without further ado, can we have Abdul Rahim Green from the UK to come to the stage, please?
إن الحمد لله نحمد ونستعين ونستغفر ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له وما يضلل فلا هادي له وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله وبعد. We begin by praising Allah, we praise Him, we seek His help, and we ask for His forgiveness, and we take refuge with Allah from the evil of ourselves and from the evil consequence of our evil actions. Whomsoever Allah guides, no one can misguide, but whomsoever Allah leaves to go astray, no one can guide. And I testify that Allah alone is worthy of worship, and that Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam is his servant and his messenger. Today I'm going to try and address one of the most frequently asked questions and one of the issues that is often brought up. How can people who do so much good, who may not believe in God, who may not follow Islam, how can you say that those people are going to go to hell and suffer eternal torment? So I'm going to attempt to throw some light on this issue. And so the topic we've called the topic of this talk, do good people go to hell? So the first thing I want to talk about is good. What is good? And what is bad? What makes something good and what makes something bad? What makes something good and what makes something evil? It may be quite easy to define the characteristics of a good person. Generally, probably we would agree that a good person is truthful and honest and sincere and kind and gentle and caring and honest and sincere and humble, and perhaps maybe we could add brave and courageous and generous. And there are a whole series of characteristics that you find by and large human beings they consider them to be good and noble characteristics. And similarly, you could probably pretty much point out the bad characteristics, greed, oppression, and injustice, murder, ingratitude, envy, hatred, backbiting, and so on and so forth. And some of these things may identify specific evil actions that people do, or it may identify characteristics, character traits within a person that are identifiable as either good or evil characteristics. But part of our problem here is, what is good for one group of people may be evil in respect to another group of people. So for example, let's take an extreme example. Let's take the example of Nazi Germany. It's an extreme example, but it's a real one because it's happened historically, and it's not that far away in terms of history, where the whole concept of good and evil in Nazi Germany, at least from our perspective, is a concept that is very skewed. A lot of the things that they considered good are things that by and large people would consider actually to be evil. Or they may have considered characteristics to be good and noble characteristics if they were found in a German or a pure Aryan, but not if they are found in another inferior race. So often what you find here is many or some of the ideas concerning what is good and what is evil are subjective. They're pretty much based upon people's culture, people's society, people's experiences. So how do we define good in this respect? And this is a huge problem. Let's take a subject that is often brought up in respect to Islam vis-a-vis Western society, and that's the topic of homosexuality. In Western society today, homosexuality is considered to be acceptable, and that in fact if people have an issue or they have a problem with homosexuals or homosexual behavior, there is a term now that is applied to those people. They call them homophobic, which means they have an irrational fear of homosexuals. However, in these same societies, only 60 years ago, in the very self-same societies, I'm talking about Norway and Sweden and Denmark and the Netherlands and the United Kingdom, in those countries 60 years ago, homosexuality was a criminal offense. It was a crime to be a homosexual. And homosexuality was considered by psychiatrists and psychologists to be a form of mental disease. Now, we are told that if you have a problem with homosexuality, you're the one with the mental disease. So, which is right? Is any of these positions based upon objective evidence? This is important as well. Interestingly enough, by the way, it's not. It's not. Because if you open a book on clinical psychology from the 1970s where they considered homosexuality to be a disease, there was a shift. And this shift took place due to a consensus amongst psychologists and psychiatrists. But the issue here is, it's interesting. Was this based upon real scientific evidence? Well, from some of the studies that I have done, it seems it's not. It was based upon the fact that there was a strong lobby group within that community, of psychologists and psychiatrists who were lobbying for homosexuality and for the attitude towards homosexuality to be changed, partly because quite a lot of them were themselves practicing homosexuals. It's interesting how science itself can become subject to different interpretations of moral positions. It's not anything new. For example, in the Soviet Union, in the USSR, the former Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, which was a professed atheist society. It was an their actual professed belief system was atheism. So the official position in the USSR was that there is no God. And therefore, any scientific theory that might suggest the existence of an intelligent being was discounted simply because it contradicted the state's belief system. And we find something similar happening in some Muslim countries, for example, who reject the theory of evolution based upon the idea that that is what contradicts the Quran. So we find that things that should be, in the sense, in the realm of scientific truth, are very easily manipulated according to the belief system of any given time and any given place. We could take another controversial subject. The subject of polygamy, for example. The subject of polygamy. In Western societies, at least outwardly, polygamy is considered to be, well, I suppose let's just say that it's considered to be evil. At the very worst, it's considered to be evil, or at least they just consider it to be, you know, not right, not a good thing. Yet you could go to another society, for example, you could go to Nigeria, and I've talked to many Nigerians, and they say that if a man has only one wife, they think he must be a miser. They think he's a miser. You know what I mean? A miser who's tight with his money. He doesn't like to spend his money. Yeah? Because in their culture, a man shows his generosity by caring for women, by caring for children, by having many wives, by having many children. And that is the social support system. A man will have more than one wife, and that's how women in society who have no husbands get supported. So a man who doesn't, maybe they look at him as, what sort of man are you, you know? And they also think he's stingy. But that's because the whole cultural circumstance is very, very different. So the issue here is, who determines what's right and what's wrong? Who determines what's good and what's evil? Who has the right to say, this is right and this is wrong and this is good and this is evil? Because when we ask the question, do good people go to hell? It begs another question. Who decides what's good? Who decides what is good? Who decides what is right and who decides what is wrong? Where do we get this criterion from? And this is very interesting, especially when we look at the discussion and the dialogue that's taking place now with atheism. You may have heard, and I mentioned this in my talk yesterday very briefly, why is there so much suffering and evil in the world? Why is there so much suffering and evil in the world? But it's very strange to hear such an argument coming from an atheist. And I'll tell you why. Atheists generally, not always, but atheists generally believe in the theory of evolution, right? And the theory of evolution puts forward the claim that we human beings, along with every animal and vegetable species, has come into existence through a process of random mutation of DNA. And that all living things have two imperatives: survive and procreate. That's it. To survive and reproduce. Survive and reproduce. And the ones who survive and reproduce the most successfully, they are a dominant species and they continue to evolve. The ones who fail to survive and fail to reproduce, they reach a dead end in evolution and they go into extinction. So according to the theory of evolution, we human beings are just animals. We're just like every other creature on the planet. We have just evolved. We're just a product of random mutation of DNA. Right? Now what does that imply in the field of morality? In other words, on the issue of right and wrong and good and evil. What does it imply? Well, let's think about it like this. When you watch the TV and you see a lion, yeah, hunting, and it jumps on a little, you know, deer, a little gazelle, and it bites its, you know, throat, and then the old lions pounce and they eat the gazelle. Do you say, "What an evil, wicked lion"? Do you? You don't, because the lion is just doing what lions do. Yes? When a male shark rapes, because that's what he does, he forces himself on a female shark, you don't go, "Oh my, you look at this rapist." Right? When the female black widow spider, yeah, eats the male spider after he's mated with her, what do you say? "What an evil spider." You don't, because why? Animals are just doing what animals do. There is no good and evil in the animal world. There is no right and wrong. They just follow their instincts, reproduce, survive, reproduce, survive. Therefore, if you're an atheist and you believe in the theory of evolution, we human beings do exactly the same thing. So when genocide is committed, when people rape and murder and steal, there is no good and evil. It's just human beings doing what human beings do. Right? If you believe in the theory of evolution. So therefore, for an atheist to even talk about evil, they have refuted their own belief. Because the fact that they acknowledge the existence of something that is intrinsically, objectively evil means that they know there must be a concept of good and evil that transcends, that goes beyond just mere human experience and human happening. And what transcends, what goes beyond human experience and human interactivity? Where does this idea of something that is really actually objectively evil and something that is really actually objectively good, where could it possibly come from? There is only one source. If you think about it, it must be God. It must be. It must be God. So let's think about this, for example. Let's go back to Nazi Germany. Who would agree that killing 6 million human beings, most of them women and children and old people, in gas chambers, whatever their race, color, or creed, who would agree that killing 6 million human beings like that is something that is evil and absolutely evil, and it doesn't matter what time or circumstance, that was evil, is evil, and always will be evil. Hands up who agrees that it's objectively absolutely evil. Well, I agree it's evil. Good, most of us. Right? But imagine the scenario. The whole world is taken over by the Nazis. And the Nazis convince everybody, as they convinced the German people, that actually killing Jews was a good thing to do. Does it then become good? Does it become good because the Nazis convince everybody that it's good? Or is it evil and always stays evil? Which one? It's evil and always stays evil. That's because most of us have an instinctive idea that there are things that are absolutely evil. They are really truly evil and really truly wrong. And it doesn't matter if we all happen to be brainwashed sometime in the future into thinking otherwise, those things are evil and they remain evil. Now I'm bringing this up because it's very important. When we say, do good people go to hell? I'm asking the question, who is good? Who decides what is good? In Nazi Germany, if you killed lots of Jews, you're a good person. The Serbs, and I'm sure some of you still remember what happened in Bosnia, in former Yugoslavia. I'm sure some of you still remember Srebrenica. I'm sure some of you even remember the name of this man, Slobodan Milosevic. This man is wanted, I think he's been arrested now, for war crimes, for murdering, and for ordering the murder and the rape and the torture of thousands of Muslims. There are pictures of this man in Serbia with wings like an angel and light behind him like he's a saint. This man, there are people who think he's a saint and think he's an angel. So, who decides what's good? Who decides what's evil? Who decides who is a good person? To these people, not only is Slobodan Milosevic a good man, he's an angel and he's a saint. But to every Muslim who knows anything about him, he's a shaitan. He's an evil person. So you tell me now, where is he going? Heaven or hell? No, but okay. Based upon what though? Based upon what criterion? Do you get my point? Who decides what's good? Who decides what's right? Who decides what's wrong? Okay. So the point is here, is that we have to have an objective criterion of morality. We have to have a criterion or a decision about what's right and what's wrong outside us as human beings. Because our culture changes, our society changes, our opinions change, we are brainwashed, we are indoctrinated into believing a whole different range of things. One day this is a crime, the next day it's a crime to think that the crime was a crime. Yeah? How mad is that? How crazy is that? And this is the problem. This is the issue. What do you mean by good? What do we mean by good? This is the issue that we need to discuss today. Now, obviously, my objective is to explain how is it and how could it happen that a person who seems to be doing good things could go to hell. But if we can understand from the beginning that the decision of what is good and what is evil, and not only the decision of what is good and evil, but also the decision about the gradation, the grades, yeah, of good and evil. Yeah? Which is a bigger sin? Which is a bigger evil? Which is the greatest evil? What is the worst thing? And then what's next and what's next? What is the levels of evil? What is the greater evil? What is the lesser evil? So it's not only about what is good and evil itself, but which is the greater evil and which is the greater good. This is another issue. So from the perspective of the Muslim, which goes back to my talk yesterday about Islam, the true religion, from the perspective of the Muslim, the one, the only one who has the right and the knowledge to decide what is truly good and what is truly evil, what is truly right and what is truly wrong, and what is the gradation or the grades of good and evil, is the Creator of the heavens and the earth, Allah. And He has revealed this knowledge through all the messengers, but it has been revealed and preserved, as we Muslims believe, to the Prophet Muhammad, may God's peace and blessings be upon him, which is preserved in the Quran and also in the authentic teachings and sayings of the Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him. Now I want to describe hell. I want to describe hell. I want to remind us of just how terrible the hellfire is. What is this place, hell? What is this place, hell? Hellfire. Hellfire is a place. It is so huge that the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said that the hellfire has 70,000 bridles. You know, a bridle is what you put on the horse, yeah? 70,000 bridles. And each bridle is pulled by 70,000 angels. A stone was dropped from the top of the hellfire. It took 70 years to reach the bottom. That is the size of the hellfire. And it has already been created. It has been described as a fire blazing fiercely. The fire of the hell is 70 times hotter than the fire of this earth. As the companions of the Prophet said, if it had been as hot as this earth, the fire is, it would have been enough. And the Prophet said, yes, it would have been enough, but it's 70 times hotter. The smallest punishment in the hellfire, this is the person in hell who has the smallest punishment, the smallest. He will have two sandals of fire. And because of that, his brain will boil. And he thinks that he has the worst punishment, but in fact he has the least punishment. This is the hellfire. It is a place where people will be surrounded by fire, where the skin of the human being, this is where the pain is, in the skin. The pain is in your skin. Allah, God, will burn